This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is a proud member of the FanHub 100. Football without fans is nothing, so we've partnered with FanHub to put fans first. Search FanHub app to play your part in the journey.
Well, I know we're just over a week into 2021, but Happy New Year. We ain't done one since.
It's been ages. Well, no, it hasn't been that long, actually, but it's been a while since we did a guest, but
yeah,
it's not been that.
You've not been well. It wasn't the COVID, but you feeling better?
Well, it might have been. I don't know. but yeah, I feel like I've had 2 weeks. I'm all right now, but I'm getting there. Yeah, I'm not dead, so I'm one of the 99.7%. So
you're not going to become a statistic.
No, I didn't want to. but the win yesterday certainly upped my mood. Anyway,
yeah, that was
solid win.
I thought of an ugly win.
Yeah, it's the ugliest we've had under Malmsey, put it that way.
Yeah, we're going to need some more of them. It'll probably be in the next game as well. The next game against Grimsby is absolutely huge. It's a sad sentence to say that. Southend versus Grimsby is absolutely huge. That's how far we've fallen. But that's where we're at. And that game is massive.
Yeah, it's a shame. It is a shame, isn't it? But no, I thought we played well yesterday, really. You know, we certainly made the better chances. And for all the ball they had, for much of the ball as they had, shall I say, they didn't really do anything with it. I thought we were well worth the win. So,
particularly when we had 10 men.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you sent it to us separately, but I thought you was bang on. It's they're actually by no means the worst thing we played. But they were just caught in that trap of just trying to play that stupid football where it's just not going to work at this level, and they just caught in that trap, I think. Good to see a win with 10 men, you know, it's something else we haven't done in a while.
Yeah, so, I wonder when the last time was we done that. That's a good shout.
It's all part of the confidence, I think, isn't it? You know,
massively,
make no mistake about it. You know, I've never been Dieng's biggest fan, but the last month or two, he's absolutely transformed his Southend career, to be honest. He was unbelievable with this stuff. There's about 3 or 4 passes he done were just unreal. And I think he really had it in his locker. So, it's all part of the morale and the confidence, I think.
Yeah, 2 of those balls were after the red card as well. So really, I think we ended up with the better, more clear-cut chances after the red card, and we obviously
I think we by far had the better chances. I think apart from one actual proper save where he's had to tip it over, the rest he just caught, I think, obviously. Yeah. I might be doing a disservice there, but I'm not saying it's just caught, but, it wasn't routine. Like he was tested. Yeah, routine. It wasn't like he was tested.
I know what you mean. If any of those go in, you're thinking he's made a howler. They're routine stuff. He made a fantastic save in the first half.
Yeah, very good save.
Which, outfield player pundits would say he's saved with the wrong hand. But it's a great save to get it over the bar.
Very good save.
After that, second half, he's it's routine stuff for him, catching practice.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the new lad looked mustard, I thought.
Yeah.
I've seen a few comparisons on the zones of Colin Moore, and I think that's bang on.
Not Barry Corn. Very,
not Barry Corn, no. No idea where that one came from, but he's, you know, the way he's quite powerful, the way he's cuts on that left, it was just very Colin Moore-esque.
It's been a long time since we've had a striker that will get on the ball and just run at someone. Anyway, yeah, let's not get ahead of ourselves. It's one game. He didn't even play the whole game.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
But it was very impressive debut. One of the most impressive debuts we've seen from a striker for quite some time. Like Stephen Humphreys had a very good debut a couple of years ago, but there ain't been many strikers that have come in and hit the ground running and scored on their debut like that after about 3 minutes.
All in all, it was a good performance. Another four wins in a row now at home. Was it one loss in seven or eight? So it's the form's great. We're linked with several players. You know, I think it's it's so many reasons to be positive in a weird way, even at the bottom of the league. It's strange.
It's strange
to be in that sense.
But I do agree with you. It's strange.
Yeah.
But I think there's lots to certainly be positive about. I think we'll stay up. I'm going to put it that bluntly. I think we'll stay up.
I was always confident of staying up as long as we could sign players. And so the later it was getting, I was sort of, you know, it was a bit squeaky bum time. But as soon as we can sign players, I had no concerns. I still don't now. I'm genuinely not concerned about going down. I'm honestly not concerned about it. Mm. I think we'll start, not comfortably, but I think there's worse teams than us. That's why.
Yeah.
There's worse teams than us.
Yeah. Right. But yeah, we've managed to bag ourselves a guest, first one of the year.
Yeah, yeah, a proper player at all.
This is a player. This is a player. Yeah.
A proper career. Proper. That's no disrespect to anyone bad, but you know what I mean. Like,
no, this is someone let's run off the former clubs. Norwich City, where played in the European Cup, beat Bayern Munich. Derby County, Premier League. Manchester City, Cardiff City, and Leicester. I think I've got the order wrong, but they're the former clubs.
Yeah,
massive stature of guests to come and talk to us to. Have we managed this
from the other side of the world as he's going to work? So
yeah,
but he's obviously Spencer Pryor.
Yes.
We managed to catch him, for those who don't know, he lives in Australia now. So we managed to catch him whilst he's on the bus going to work. So
yeah, we're recording this after that we've obviously spoke to him. He is on his daily commute. So you will have to, you know, just accept there is a couple of tiny little lags in the signal, but he's on a bus. And not only that, he's on the other side of the world. So I think you can forgive us for that. I hope you can anyway.
Yeah. But I enjoyed it. So hopefully anyone listening does as well.
Yeah. Right, let's crack on. Spencer Pryor.
I'm on a bus with a face mask on.
Ah, oh, fair enough. How are you doing, mate? You alright?
Yeah, not so bad.
As the pandemic in Australia been?
Yeah, it's we're all right. We're just we're back working. So the Northern Beaches, which is the area I'm in, we had a big lockdown over Christmas, but we've just come out of it now. So everybody seems to be getting back to normal.
That's nice. We've gone complete the other way. We're all back in hibernation, pretty much.
You can't work it out, can you? You lot, you don't know what you're doing.
No,
you got no idea.
No, I think since I don't know for the last 3 or 4 months, like our rules have changed every 2-3 weeks. It's just no consistency.
We had 12 cases. I'm not kidding. 12 cases. On the northern beaches in Sydney, and they literally went lockdown, wouldn't let us off the beaches. And then they put us all into, they shut everything down basically for 4 or 5 days. Over Christmas, they gave us, like, literally said, you can have 5 people at your house, that's it. And then we split the northern beaches into 2 areas. The northern dirty lot, they had to stay in lockdown and we could come out of it. But the rest of it, so it's been done really regional here. Really,
yeah,
it's really worked.
I think we tried that with our little tier system thing, but they weren't stopping travel between the tiers, and I just think that, yeah, so there'd be nothing stopping traveling from 1 to 3 and vice versa, so yeah, it's just not going to work, is it?
Yeah, we've done all right here.
Good,
yeah,
it's good, glad you're getting back to some sort of normality.
You guys with your lockdown, how are you going? You all right?
I was just saying to Eden here, it's just boring, but you know, you kind of, I guess we are kind of almost used to it now, and like, it's not nice to think like that, but we can't change it, so you just gotta, you know, puff your chest out and get on with it, I guess.
Sure.
And we'll get there eventually. It is tough, especially this time of year over here as well. No, it's a grim time of year at the best of times, and then you know, can't do anything. But anyway, let's talk football.
Nice positive start to the conversation.
Let's go way back to your first spell at Southend.
Brilliant.
It's when the shorts were short. I've seen some of the footage.
They were really short. They were so short. Then yellow shorts. They were proper spray-ons, weren't they? They were brilliant. And they were so shiny. Yeah, so shiny and lovely and tight.
So was it Dave Webb that signed you for that first period?
Well, I was already there, right? So
right.
I was already an apprentice. Year of my YTS. So I was Justin Edinburgh was a year older than me. He was part of the year older intake.
Okay.
And then, so I was in my second year of YTS when Dave Webb came back in. So during my YTS, I can't think who was in charge first. I know we had Big Bait.
Yeah.
He was there. And then maybe Webby came in after Tick 8, and it was just like a new lease of life, even for me, even as an apprentice. So I remember one training session we did at Gloucester Park where we'd finished training, and then Paul Clark wanted to do some attacking headers. So he called a couple of boys over to put some crosses in for him with a keeper in. And he wanted me to go in as the defender against him. And I didn't let him win a header. And I was only like 17 year old. And he was trying to smash me about, and he was trying to, obviously he wanted to score a goal because it was part of what he was trying to do. He was part of his training. I'm like, fuck off, you're not winning one header. I'm not going to let you. And Webby was walking across the park, and I don't even know if he'd actually started or if he was just about to start, but that was sort of my introduction and my motivation.
Yeah.
And then after that, we played 2 friendly games against Gothenburg and Crystal Palace, and he threw me in those like friendly games, and I don't know why we weren't playing, but he threw me in against Gothenburg and Palace, and Wright and Bright were playing for Palace in that game.
Yeah.
So that was it was just part of my education and good development. And then at the back end of the season, I got thrown into the team. It was a struggling team. We were really, really going poorly at that time. We finished up getting relegated on the final day. But that was the start.
Do you think that's kind of missing now with young players, where, like you were saying there, you were literally just thrown in? Do you think there's almost, I don't know, too much in involvement with academies now, where it's just...
You've got to be ready. It's about the individual, whether they're mentally and physically ready to go in to senior football, the first team football. You know, back in those days when we had the reserves, it was good because you either sunk or swam when you were thrown into the reses. And, you know, no senior player likes playing in the reses, but the younger players use it as a good opportunity to get going, and you get to see where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
With first team football, like I said, you've got to take it on a case by case. You can't just do it on age. You've got to do it based on if they've got the mental toughness to handle it, and also physically. I don't actually think that I was probably physically ready for it, but you know, I was reasonably quick, so whatever I lacked in terms of my being able to understand the game and the speed of the game, I tended to be able to use my speed to get me out of difficult situations.
Yeah,
but you're right, the academy's Saffron's academy is so underrated. It's not even funny. I mean, the amount of players developed that have been sold on, it is incredible. Yeah. Actually, given what they've done, my issue I have with it is that I think the players have probably been sold too early. So I would have loved to see more players coming through, thrown into the first team if they're ready, rather than going to like a Man United set up or to Chelsea, you know, give them 20 games in the first team, and you double the money you're getting for these kids, if not triple it.
Yeah.
So, I've got a few other issues with it, but they'll stay off.
Yeah. No, you're right though. I think there's a fair few youngsters that have come through at Southend and been sold on that they wouldn't have even heard of. There's been a few that have been in the first team, but yeah, there are loads that have just been sold on for a decent profit for someone that's, you know, never kicked a ball in the first team. But as you say, you make even a handful of first team appearances, you would like to think that value would go up.
Yeah, you're right. Look, the bigger clubs can just take a gamble on someone, right? Whereas Southend and the investment that they put in these players to actually keep them back another couple of years and put them in the first team, that takes a bit more investment. That the clubs are like, well, look, let's be honest, the clubs are on its arse, so it needs the money.
Yeah.
Which is part of the reason why they've sold players when they've sold them. But it's short term. It's real short-term focus rather than long-term sort of understanding an idea of what you want to do.
What camp are you in? Are you in the academy football, or go back to the resis, if that makes sense? What one do you think is more beneficial?
I think you can do both, eh? I think you can have an academy, particularly up to under 18s, maybe even under 19s. And then you should have a resis, which I think you've got the 23s over there, right? But and I don't know how many players you can play, overage players you can play in that. But you definitely should have reserve team football. You know, we used to play against Arsenal, and we'd have games against Tottenham and West Ham. And I know the club's trying to organise games that are going to challenge them, but you definitely should be, you should have resis. It toughens the younger players up and gets them ready, but it's also good for the senior players that are, you know, if you've got a good group of senior players, not arseholes that don't want to play resis, but good players that want to help younger players come through, it's a great environment to have that opportunity to throw them in together, mix them in to get them so they can up school the kids.
Yeah. No, good stuff. Back to your first spell at Southend. You were part of the side that played Tottenham, weren't you? Against Gary Lineker and Paul Gascoigne.
Yeah, was it? Yeah, someone shared it on a Twitter thing the other few weeks, maybe a couple of months ago, because it was some sort of anniversary of it. So I was like, oh, I'll have a little watch of that, a bit of the highlights. To be fair, like, I was young and raw. My one memory of the game was Paul Gascoigne smashing me in the chops, punching me and running off laughing like a kid. We both went in for a tackle. But it was, we were unlucky not to get through that day, really unlucky. And
well, we actually won the game. We won 3-2, didn't we? Was it away goals that done us? Yeah.
It was away goals. I think we lost 1-0 at their place.
Yeah.
So, we had a good side that then. We had a side that really stuck together, fought for each other. And, being, like I said, being a young player in sort of my real first year of being a pro, I had guys around me that helped me and encouraged me and supported me. I had players like Paul Roberts on the right side. He never shut up. And then you'd have people like Dave Martin or Clarkey on the left back, or playing as a left-sided centre-back with me. So there were players around that would support and help me. People like Peter Butler. We just had a good group of guys that worked super hard for each other and dug in when we needed to dig in. And, when you got someone like Crowley up front that, if he's taking 35 shots a game, chances are he might hit the target with two. I love Crowley, but he was a shoot on sight, and he was very, very underrated. But he had some speed and he managed to score some goals, so it was good having players like him up front as well.
Yeah, so would you say that was kind of the catalyst then for that promotion in 1990-91, like, as you were saying there, just a good, strong group?
Very much so. Very much so. It was just all players worked for, it wasn't luck that we got promoted. It was just that players all stuck together and worked hard together. And I know they talk about that now, that, the way we're going to get out of this is we're going to work harder. But you should already be doing that in the first place. That should absolutely be a given. There should be nothing left on the training park any day.
Yeah.
And we didn't. So, from a coaching and managing perspective, when managers turn around and say, we're going to have to work harder, I question what they're doing in the first place.
Mm.
But, That was never ever an issue with the group that we had that first spell. You feared for your place if you didn't work hard in training.
Yeah.
And Webby would soon call you out. And it was a given that was a non-negotiable.
Yeah. No, I'm at you right. I'm at you right. Hard work should be a given. Obviously, we are a Southend show, but we just want to touch quickly on the middle part of your career, Norwich City, and playing against Bayern Munich, beating Bayern Munich.
Well, that was the reason the reason I kind of moved on from Southend when I did was, I had that opportunity to go to, I actually had the opportunity at the time to go to either Wolves or to Norwich. And Norwich obviously had the European campaign. Wolves are throwing some money around and they just Jack Morkel or Jack Hare, whatever his name is, he was throwing money around and I was quite excited by their project that they were doing there. But at the same time, Norwich were playing in Europe and I thought, yeah, that sounds good. So as a the way that Mark Walker used to do it was when we played away, we'd go to a back three, which then meant that I fitted into the team, and he consequently would leave Gary Megson out, which is probably why I don't have a good relationship with Meggy. So maybe he got to sit on the bench in the European games and I got to play. We went to Munich with no fear. We had nothing to lose, actually. So it was just a case of rocking up, doing the best we could. We were the little boys from Norwich that were going to play the mighty Bayern Munich that had never lost to an English team in the European game at that stadium. And we just went out and did what we did. It was a class team. Class team. People like Brian Dunningdale, Ian Crook in midfield. It's Chris Sutton up front. It was a top shelf team and some real senior experienced players around. So again, for me, helping me out personally, being again only 23, I think I was at the time. And you know, you got players that still helping me out. And as a 23-year-old, you think you're a senior footballer, but you still need some good guidance and support of players around you. So I was probably a bit pissed off because the goal they scored was my fault. still gripes me to this day, but you know, it's good. It's a good start to the game, good way to go. And obviously Jerry Goss is God to the Norwich supporters, and he should be. I mean, he's got some massive goals. It really pushed your time. So good time. Good fun.
You mentioned Gary Megson there. Did he end up manager? Or was he was manager?
He was manager. Yeah. I had a massive fallout with him, mate. Massive. Yeah.
Quite a few people have, haven't they? He's an interesting character.
Yeah. Look, it was his first managerial job. And I'm sure if I saw him now, I would have a pint and I'd probably still smash him and say, like, I can't believe he did what he did with me. But there were things like his man management style with me personally was awful. Like, the stuff that was going on off the pitch, he managed me really poorly at the time. And it just soured the taste that I had being at such a great club. And you know, I actually won the player of the year there, the year that I left, and I really enjoyed my time there, loved it actually. But it did put a sour taste in my mouth, unfortunately.
So was Megson, was he manager after Martin O'Neill?
Yes. So Martin came in and some of the old boys they couldn't handle it. They couldn't handle Martin's style. And you had that as players. You bond and form relationships with certain managers, and everyone got on with Mike Walcott. He's a lovely man. He was really good in terms of getting players on the park, setting us up as a team. But once he left and Martin came in, Martin brought a different sort of mentality and how to do things. And some of the older boys struggled with it. Some of them went all right, but a couple really sort of found it tough going. He then left and went to Leicester. And we had a couple of managers in between, sort of Meggy had a go, Dixie had a go, and then that was it. Then I joined Martin and went to Leicester with him.
Yeah, so was Martin O'Neill was obviously a big fan then when he took you to Leicester.
Yeah, look, I got on really well and I played some good football under him at Norwich, the way that he wanted to play, and when he went, he couldn't obviously take me with him at the time, but he said, look, if we get promotion, then I'd probably like to bring you in. So they managed to beat Crystal Palace in a playoff final. Steve Clary scored in the last minute.
Right.
And I was watching that game almost as a Leicester fan, trying to hoping they would get up, because you know, at the time I was back down in the Championship, I wanted to get back and playing in the Premier League. And it was done 3 days, I think, before the start of the season. He brought myself and Casey Keller in. And we were thrown straight in, first 3 days in there, first game up at Roker Park against Sunderland, and we managed to get a nil-nil draw. So yeah, straight back into it with Leicester, which was again, I was really excited to go and play for Martin again, and also a new challenge back in the Prem.
Yeah.
Who did they have playing from at the time then, Leicester? Because you won the League Cup, didn't you?
So it was myself and Steve Walsh. We had Matty Elliott, but he came a little bit later in. He was cup tied. So there was myself, Steve Walsh. Sometimes Julian Watts was at the back. Casey was in goal. Muddy was it. Neil Lennon. Steve Claridge, Gary Parker, Steve Guppy, Simon Grayson. I don't want to call it not a talented team, but it was a team of misfits that were kind of thrown together. And, you know, apart from Emile, who'd come through the ranks, you know, Steve Claridge did had about 25 clubs by the time he turned up at that stuff. And, you know, Muddy Izzet had been released from West Ham, and Neil Lennon had been taken from Crewe. And, you know, we were kind of a real misfit team, but had that, again, it was going back to kind of like the old South End days where everyone just had utter belief in each other. And Martin was tactically unbelievable in the way that he set the team up week in and week out, and also put the responsibility on the players to do their job and made you accountable for your one-on-one battles with your player that you were marking big time. So, you know, you had to do a lot of your own research in terms of preparing and making sure that you were right for the game in terms of knowing what your opposition, his strengths, his weaknesses. And that was something that was quite new to me to have that. But it worked. And we were, like I said, we won the League Cup. We should have probably gone on and done better in the FA Cup. We got cheated by Chelsea in the quarterfinals. So we were actually, I think we might have been 8th or 10th in the league as well. So
we lost him.
Yeah, must
cut out. It was a good successful season.
In a tunnel.
Yeah, mate.
You hear us?
Yeah.
Sorry, mate. Cut.
We lost you for a sec there. Sorry.
That's lovely, man.
We were just talking about the old Chelsea game. And it cut out.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about it. I've had counselling to get over that one, so I don't want to do it anymore.
Oh.
Right, I'm in a good space now. I hold no grudges against Erling Johnson, the cheating bastard.
We'll move on.
Yeah, good.
So when you play for Man City, which obviously not the global machine that we see for Man City today. So what was Man City like in sort of the late 90s, early 2000s?
See, it was really strange because I've done, after Leicester, I went to Derby and I loved it. I absolutely loved it at Derby, really did. Unbelievable setup. But the thing was, and I was doing really well, I had my most successful season there. I played like 35 games, the most consistent I played. And I went to see Jim Smith and I said, look, what's your thoughts? I have a band. And he's like, mate, I love you. I really do. But I don't know whether to sell you or give you a big, massive contract. I was like, what the hell? What are you on about? Like, sell me. And, you know, as a player, when you have a manager say that, your head's gone, man, you've gone. Mm. And you're thinking, right, that's it. And I need to be looking at other things. And honestly, I love the club so much. And the setup we had a brilliant coaching staff, brilliant team. And it wasn't even in my thought process to be looking elsewhere until Jim said that. And then it was only when I found out that the club were in a bit of financial trouble that
right.
pretty much everyone was on the market. And I got a sniff from Man City. So I said to the sports site, we had a full-time sports site at Derby. I said to him, get me out of here, get me there. He went, Spence, I'm a Man City supporter, so I'm going to make it happen. And fair play, I went up to meet Joe Royal, and I walked out and saw the kickbacks at Main Road, and that was it. I just went, oh, Jesus, what am I coming into here? It was so big, that, and it was so intimidating. Having never played there before, I'd never actually, you know, in the time of where, you know, Man City had been struggling and were coming back up. So I'd never crossed paths. But then seeing the kickbacks, getting a real feel for the supporters and the area, it was like, no-brainer. Absolute no-brainer. My first game, I think we played Crewe. And I managed to score. I actually scored 3 goals in my first 9 games, which anyone at Southend would know, I was really not a goal scoring centre back. I managed to score 3 goals in 9 games. And people were like, oh, he's a goal scorer. I'm like, nah, don't bank on it. And yeah, we got, like, You knew the size of the club when at training at Platt Lane, you literally would have hundreds of people standing there watching training behind wow. the fence and wanting autographs after training. It was full on. You'd walk around, you go out in the afternoon, you might go down into Manchester or into Trafford Centre, and you'd always people wanting to talk to you, you know, it was next level in terms of, I don't want to call it an invasion of privacy, but you just had to be really aware of what you were doing out and about, because the City fans are frigging everywhere. They yeah. were everywhere.
Yeah, and, it's raised laugh. Loads of people have said that Manchester, like, despite there being 2 huge clubs, it's full of City fans. Yeah. There's no United fans in Manchester.
Club in Manchester. The other one's in Salford, mate. It's not even in Manchester. So it was a good time to be there. And we got promoted. It was only when we played that Blackburn game on the last day of the season where when we scored, where you realised that it was at Ewood Park, but we had 90%, I'm not kidding, 90% of the stadium were Man City supporters who had bought all the season tickets off the Blackburn supporters. So it was the scenes on the pitch after were amazing. And yeah, I loved my time there. It was a fascinating club to be at. Something that, you know, I treasure it very highly. And obviously, like, we're getting promotion to the Premier League with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was kind of the catalyst for what has now become what it is. You know, it's always been a great club with an incredible fan base and a real good sense of community. But it's gone next level now. And, you know, I think whether we'd have got promotion or not, part of the catalyst, I think, was that we, you know, they sort of, people have seen it in the Premier League. You know, we signed players like Georgie Weah came in. And he just put it back on the map, if you like, as a Premier League club. So you look at it now, it's a completely different way, but yeah, it was a good time to be there.
Yeah. So what brought it to an end then? How come you ended up leaving?
Well, we actually got relegated. So I think the club, you know, when we got promotion to the Premier League, the club had gone promotion. And I think it was a bit too much, too quickly.
Mm.
And we weren't ready for the Premier League. So by the time, like, we struggled that first season. And then
Hello.
I think I was pretty far down the pecking order in terms of Kevin Keegan's plans.
Right.
So I never even met Kevin, but I got a phone call from Alan Cork saying, you know, would you be interested in coming down to Cardiff? He said, look, I've had a chat to Kevin and he says you're about fourth or fifth in the pecking order. And I was one of those players that always play. I never wanted to sit and pick up a paycheck. So I thought, I'll go and have a chat. So I went down and saw, they were in League One at the time. So to go from having just coming out of the Prem to then drop back down to, in fact, it was League Two, to drop back down to where I'd almost started was a bit of a calculated risk, because I so he wanted to basically recreate the crazy gang at Cardiff to what he'd done at Wimbledon, and right. You know, he had all these grand ideas and he just needed to get some players in. And you know, he had players like Graham Kavanagh and Peter Thorne sitting on the sideline waiting, but no one would commit. So it was like, yeah, we all like this plan, but no one was really locked into it. So I went down and saw Sam, liked the idea, didn't sign. But then I went to, Sam wanted to do this wacky contract, eh? Right, but you're probably going to touch on what went in the contract. But he actually wanted, initially, he said, look, I'll give you this amount of money, but I'll give you, it was like, he was giving me stupid money for clean sheet bonuses and goal bonuses. And I was like, I ain't doing that because I'm, you know, the contract I'm on now, I've still got another 2 years left. So I'm not coming down for that. So in the end, I went across, we it didn't happen. Sam's words were like, oh, it's like Romeo and Juliet. They both want each other, but they can't, and blah, blah, blah. It's like, oh, whatever, Sam. Anyway, I go to Capri on holiday, and I'm not kidding. Literally, I bump into Alan Cork, the manager in Capri. We both get absolutely battered. And next minute, I get back to my hotel room and Sam Mann's on the phone and says, you can have whatever you want. Corky wants you. He wants you that much. You can have whatever you want. So I finished up signing down there, and obviously the contract is what it is. And yeah, it was an interesting time, but I achieved what I wanted to achieve. Ultimately, I was part of a project. We were successful. We got promotion. And yeah, that was why I left Man City.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Is it right, though, that you didn't always have the greatest relationship with the supporters at Cardiff?
So what happened was, right, and this is why. The Queen Mum died. And there was meant to be a minute's silence. And when you had a bunch of the fans standing behind the goal, singing, you can shove the royal family up your ass, I didn't appreciate that.
Yeah.
So I gave them a little bit of a gesture when the referee decided to cut the minute silence short. And that was my relationship with the Cardiff supporters.
Right.
I didn't like it. You know, I don't like that. I think at the time there'd been a couple of royal deaths that were quite significant. And you know, then when you add that, I was like, nah, didn't like it. And also, and this was God's honest straight up now, they on the back of the flag, on the back of the jersey, there's they got the Welsh flag. And mine was coming off of my shirt, and they're like, he's scratching it off his shirt. But I wasn't, I swear, I wasn't scratching it off at all. But yeah, it was just a bit sour. But
yeah.
Like I said, we got promotion. So I managed to get done what I needed to do there. And to be fair, like I said, I didn't enjoy it the last year, and I'd actually thought, that's it, I'm done, I've had enough of football, I can't be arsed, I don't want to play anymore, and I was going to pack it in.
So that's how old are you at that point?
32, 33.
You're thinking of jacking it in?
I think I was 33. Yeah, I'd had enough. Like, it wasn't enjoyable anymore, and I lived just outside of Cardiff, near Newport, and I would literally get in my car, go train, get back in my car, go home. And literally it became like a job.
Yeah.
And the love of football had kind of gone, and I didn't enjoy it anymore. And yeah, I was just like, nah, done. It's not fun. I don't want to do it. And I was going to pack it in. Didn't have a plan B. It was just going to work something out when we moved home. So, that was me at that age.
Yeah. But as the story goes, you didn't retire. You returned to Southend at this point. So when did that come about? Well, obviously, Steve Tilson was the manager. What was said to you to get you to come back?
I'd actually, first and foremost, spoke to Phil Parkinson.
Okay.
Because Phil was the one who said, mate, don't pack it in. So he came and visited me. We'd moved back to Essex. So he came over, and Phil came and sat down with myself and the missus and had a chat and talked me around potentially trying to keep playing. And, you know, it isn't a whole thing about play as long as you can, you know, you're a long time retired. So
I
said to him, I'll give it a go, and went and did a bit of training with Colchester and was really, really close to joining, actually. But I said to him, look, if I'm going to come back and do it, I don't want to just do a year's contract. I'd rather do a 2-year contract. So at the time, he said, our chairman isn't giving any 2-year contracts. He's only giving one. He said, I'd love to get you it, and I'm really, really pushing, but the chairman won't break his policy and give out a 2-year contract. So I got back in and was starting to still be training with him. And at the same time, I then thought, oh, well, bugger it. I might as well drop Tilly a call. So I phoned Tilly up and said, like, look, I'm going to keep playing. What do you think? Do you think we can make something happen down here? And he's like, oh, you bastard. Like, you stitched me right up. He said, I've done my budget for the year, but I'll have a look and see what I can do. So he went and had a chat to Ron, and lo and behold, they came up with a couple of year contract, and that was it. I was back in.
So you would have obviously played with Silly. Did you know him from your playing days?
Yeah, from the first spell. Yeah.
So, you know, as it went on, you know, it was a bit of a rough start to that first season back in your second spell, but we eventually win the playoffs that season. But, you know, how far into that season did you and the other players start to think, well, you obviously having been part of a promotion before at the club, when did you start to draw some comparisons between the two and think,
you just
we could
get
do
momentum,
it?
Mate. You get momentum going, and it's... I guess we always maintain... we never really looked at it and thought about promotion. You don't. You just play. You just play week in, week out. You don't have time to think about that stuff. I reckon once you start getting close towards the end of the season, maybe 10 games out, then you start looking and seeing what's going on with the table. But the rest of the time, you really don't, unless you're down the bottom end and you're trying to scrap and get out of it. Or if you're right at the top. If you're in the middle, you're just plodding along, going along as you do.
I'd kill to be in the middle right now.
Wouldn't you ever? It's only when you really get 10 games out that you start to look and go, okay, right, what can we achieve here now? Rather than looking and constantly looking over your shoulder. Football's a game of survival, man. It really is. And if you're in this shit, then you're panicking. If you're up the top, it's lovely. And you tend not to look at the league and worry too much about it. Because it absolutely is a game of survival. And once we got in the playoffs, I think we did all right in one of the LDV Cup, didn't we? We'd had that experience as well of winning and playing a bit more tournament type football. Mm-hmm. And we just sort of managed to be successful. Yes, it was. Once we got into the playoffs, we knew we'd be all right. Mm.
This is a story that I'd heard from a couple of different sources down the years. I just wonder if you could confirm whether it's true or false, that it was your idea, or you had some influence in massively like downplaying that playoff final. Because like you said, we'd been to the LDV final and we were there all suited and booted. We'd stayed in the fantastic hotel. What was it your idea to go, no suits, no nothing fancy, just another game?
Rock up and it's just another game, absolutely, because we'd had that as well. So the closest that, and I was kind of falling back on my time literally with Man City, that game where we got promoted at Blackburn, and it was just another game. And you rock up in the tracksuit. It wasn't a cup final. It's classed as a playoff final, but it's not a cup final. It's another league game, if you like. It's just another game.
Yeah.
And
that makes sense.
You get teams and you get people, players that, you know, they really do embrace and celebrate the good and the good times. I was a bit too long in the tooth. And like I said, I've kind of not been down and over football, but like, I think by the time we won when we got through to the final, and there were players and there were people, and they were probably still celebrating that we were going to be going and playing in the final. I was back home. I got myself back home. I wasn't into that stuff, and I didn't really go out and mix too much in that sort of regard. And yeah, just kept myself to myself, and it was another game. So the final was a tough game, but you know, we'd had that experience of playing there, so we'd had that as an additional bonus in terms of knowing what we were going to expect from an environment perspective. But we certainly didn't want to make it feel like a cup final.
No, Now, what did you think when you saw Duncan Jupp throw one-on-one with the goalkeeper?
How good is that? That is one of my favourites. That's one of the best moments in football that I've honestly, because he's such an amazing boy, eh? He's so good. And, you know, he wore his heart on his sleeve. He mixed really, really well with all the players. And, you know, I was just buzzing for him, to finally get to score a goal. What a great environment to do it in. And it took all the pressure off, eh? It took every inch of pressure off. Yeah. So it was good.
No, you're right. That is one of my. It's probably still in certainly my top three like favourite South End moments.
Good. I bet I know your favourite. I bet it's Freddie's goal, isn't it?
Do you know what? Because everyone says that.
Bloody Freddie. Yeah.
Everyone
Bloody
says Freddy. That. I mean, I'm not saying it wasn't right up there, but I like to be a bit different.
All right.
Just on there, you mentioned that Man United game, something that you mentioned there, like you keep yourself to yourself and never got involved too much. Like, this isn't a criticism of you, but like when that goal was scored that night, like the team are all celebrating, you're just walking back to like your position. Is that you? Are you just the, no? It's not a criticism. Is that you in the mindset now that now there's something to protect? Now there's a clean sheet to try and preserve. Are you just in the zone at that point?
I'm always in it. I was always in it. So it was like, yeah, it was right. Switch on, because that's when you're most vulnerable after you've just scored, eh?
Yeah, yeah. So, and they hit the post about 20 seconds later.
Well, I wasn't good enough that I could afford to go and just be blasé and celebrate. And yeah, some players can and want to, and that's great. But no, that wasn't my style. So. Yeah. It never had been. It's funny, like we had so at Derby we had a thing where we were going to try where Steve Round wanted to do this where if we scored we all sprinted back, we didn't celebrate, we all sprinted back into our positions ready to go again, and then we just went right, we're ready. So it was that sort of mentality to go no, just you score, then you switch back on again.
Yeah.
It's a good day, though. That was a great day.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to go and celebrate. It's too far for me to run.
I love that. That running back into position, that's brilliant. I love that idea.
You imagine seeing that now?
I'd love to see that. I think that's cool. A brilliant idea.
It'd be so cool, huh? Just sprint back. And just, it's a bit like basketball, eh? Where you know, if you score, they all just sprint straight back and get in their zone. Like, boom, there you go.
So when you, at the end of that season in the Championship, you do eventually call it time. And then, of course, you emigrated. Was that something that you'd known you wanted to do for a long time, move to Australia?
I'll be honest, right? So we moved back to Essex and the whole idea was to be back around family. And we thought it was going to be this lovely utopia and everyone will come over at the weekends and we'll see everybody. But people still had their own lives and was doing their own thing. Hmm. And when we got back then, we just went, oh, it's a bit shit, isn't it? Where are we going to go? Like, there's got to be more to life than this. And I went up to London one day and when we got really drunk with a mate and said, oh, Sydney sounds good. And next minute, the missus was on a plane checking it out. And this was at the start of 2004, maybe 2004. And she came over and she fell in love with it. And she said, you'd really like it. And I went, let's have a go. And before you know, she's got a 4-year state-sponsored visa. So going into the last season, I think we maybe got halfway through the season and then we knew we were going literally the week after the season finished.
Well.
So, yeah, it was all very quick, but we had to get out of there because of our medicals and stuff. We'd had our medical to come over and the medicals are only valid for a certain amount of time, so we had to leave.
Right.
So was you always going to go, no matter the circumstances, at the south end, for instance? You know, if we'd have stayed up and yep. maybe...
Ah, yeah. I was gone. I was gone to yeah. Big time. Yeah.
No, it's cool. Fair play. Make a bold move like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big, big decision to make that, isn't it? Just up
yeah, it was... But it was, like I said, I mean, it was huge. We had three girls there, so it was a huge family decision to move. But, you know, something that... I've no regrets over it. I miss the football, but I on a day-to-day sort of place, it's you know, I put my girls up in a really, really nice spot, and they've all done really well for themselves. So it's that legacy of what I've given my kids. And, you know, they've got dual citizenship now, so they've got options and opportunities that, you know, a lot of people don't ever get. So I feel really lucky for it. It was a big move, but it's all right. It's one that's paying off.
Yeah, you've done a bit of coaching out there, haven't you, with the women's side?
Yeah. Well, I started doing my badges as soon as I got over here, and I've done my B license back in the UK and started my A license here.
Right.
And then while I was doing it, I don't know if I finished it. No, I'm still doing it. I can't remember. Anyway, while I was on the course, I met up with Tom Samani, who was the women's national team coach. He came and presented on the course. Anyway, his assistant got taken in with the men's national team, with the Socceroos, and it left a spot in 2011. It left a spot to go to the World Cup in Germany and coach with the national team and be the assistant. So I was like, fancy that. I'll have a go. And I've never coached female footballers before. But I went with them in 2011 and it went really well. We were really successful. I then also took the head coaching role for the under-20s because there was a real synergy between the players. There was a lot of players that were in the senior team that were also eligible for the 20s. So they put me in charge of that as well. And then, yeah, I did that for a little bit and then got caught up in some political stuff that was going on at the time. So that finished up, you know, I've taken a couple of other coaching roles since. I've been over to Thailand and took their women's national team. And yeah, I kind of keep falling back into coaching women's football, but it's not something that I'm conscious of. It's just something that I don't mind doing, actually. I've been pretty all right here and pretty successful. So it's something that, you know, if people value that, then I don't think it's relevant whether you're a male or female coaching women's football. It's just the players want good coaching.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what the sex is. So.
No.
You know, we've seen that with England now. You know, they've had a reasonably good, successful couple of few years, and now they've gone down the path of doing different things as well and bringing someone new in. So hopefully that'll be successful for them.
Yeah.
What's the biggest differences between sort of men's and women in football, or in terms of coaching it anyway?
Industrial language.
Really?
Yeah, you literally don't swear. I've never been a swearer as a coach, but you don't. Like, I wouldn't cuss with a female player the same as I would with a male player.
Mm.
So yeah, that's really the only difference. Technically, you know, in terms of the speed of the game, of course, it's a bit more slower, but it's a bit more technical as well in terms of how you have to make sure that that's spot on. Things like goalkeepers, you can't expect the goalkeeper to be able to plant and then dive the same, a female goalkeeper, the same as a male goalkeeper. So yeah, when you're talking about switching play, you might have to have an extra pass in there to switch play. You know,
yeah,
because a female footballer probably can't drill a ball on a big diagonal, yeah, the same as a male can, right? And that's just biomechanics, which is understandable.
Yeah.
That's the only
difference.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good to see.
Yeah, so just as we start to wind it down here, we've got there's
I've got a meeting soon. I've got to do my job.
just really quickly then, like this summer, yeah, before we made a managerial appointment, you were quite, yeah, vocal about how, you know, the club needed a whole restructure, possibly like a new chief exec in, yeah, place. You know, making the right appointment, identifying the style, et cetera, et cetera. If you look at the slight upturn in fortunes now, yep, since obviously a transfer embargo got lifted, do you think we got that appointment right with the current manager?
Yeah, I do, actually. I do. And time will tell, and he needs time. And yep, I think Ron will give him time. I think Ron will give him time for numerous factors. One, because he probably can't afford to pay him off, but also because I think he genuinely believes that the guy's got the best intention. He's throwing all his energy into the club.
Yeah.
That's not to be disrespectful to the guys that were there before, but I think that he's coming with a fresh new approach. What I find really interesting at the moment is he came in with a philosophy and an idea that he wanted to play this great possession-based football style, but he started picking up results now by not playing that way.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when you go in as a manager and you say how you want to play, but you then compromise it, you better make sure you're winning games, because that's when you then have a real expiry date on your shelf life, yeah, in terms, yeah, of being a manager. You know, if you start compromising your own philosophy. And of course, you've got to adapt and be agile in terms of how you want to do that. But I think he's now seen the next level in terms of what it's like being in a new league. Yeah. And he's adapted and he's adjusted. And, you know, yeah, I think, like I said, he's brought in a few staff with him that have got different ideas. He seems to be more forward thinking rather than just a bit like churning the old bunch of managers around that we've seen for so many years. It's refreshing to get someone new in.
Yeah.
You know, I really hope it does work out for him. And whatever anyone says about Ron, I hope it works out for him too, because, you know, he has put a lot of money into the club, rightly or wrongly, whatever anyone says about him.
Yeah.
Without him, the club's gone ski. So, you know, I do hope that the club's successful.
Yeah, cool. Just really quickly before you go, yeah, we've got a couple of, yeah, questions that some fans have come in with. We'll run through these really quickly. Yeah. We've got one from Pete, who says he remembers on Soccer AM years ago hearing that you were into your heavy metal with bands such as Slipknot. Were you ever allowed to control the music in the changing room?
Never. They wouldn't let me anywhere near it. Yeah, well, I kind of wasn't really into that in the first place. You know, I'm an Essex boy, so it was always a bit bloody soul and R&B shy. But that kind of changed. And then it was only when I went to Leicester that Casey Keller said, come on, we're going to go and watch this band play. So Casey Keller got me into the rock music. We used to go to a place called Rock City in Nottingham, which was insane. Yeah. And we saw bands like, who did we see there? We saw System of a Down, The Offspring.
Bloody hell.
Silver, that is heavy.
Silverchair. This young 16-year-old boy says, you've got to come and watch this young 16-year-old Aussie boy play from a band called Silverchair. And, we went and, yeah, so we saw those sort of bands there. It was good. And then obviously I went to places Casey like Keller Download. Yeah, he got me into it.
And you were never allowed near the changing room music?
Ever. They wouldn't let me near it. No one.
We got next one from Chris, who asks, is there any job in football that could ever tempt you to move back to England?
Yeah. But I won't say what it is.
Yeah.
No, there is. You know, I would never rule it out. I wouldn't rule it out. But, you know, and I'm not stupid in terms of sort of where the level that I'm at. I'm also cautious and mindful that, you know, my pro license was done through AFC. And the Euro snobs tend to go, well, it's not, you know, you've got an AFC pro license. But I've seen some content from the UEFA Pro. And, man, let's be honest, I'll be honest, it's not even as good as the A license that we did. Like, but there are jobs that I would come back for, but I'm not looking.
Fair enough.
Yeah, we saw some content last season as well that's from a supposed A license. Mm-hmm. We'll just leave it at that.
Yep.
Yeah, don't do any licenses in Wales, I think, was the message that we got from that one.
Oh, don't say that. No, look. What I would say is a guy called Rob Sherman, who's been down here in Australia, used to work, he was the technical director for the Welsh FA a few years back. The content of stuff that he puts in courses is insane. It's next level. Like, it really is. I don't know what's going on there now, but all I can say is that, you know, having worked with somebody like him and seeing the courses he wrote, the pro license down here now is as good as anything you would get over in Europe, honestly. But, you know, you can go over to Ireland and you can get it done anywhere, the pro license and the consistency of the courses. That's where I think some stuff's missing out, eh?
Yeah. Just for a final one then from Yorkshire Blue, who asks, if you could relive one day from your career, what would it be?
Oh, that's a good one. Mm. One day. I don't have one. No, seriously, it's like... No, I don't really have one, honestly. I've got a good... Because I look at everything where I've made mistakes and I think about wanting to try and do them again. I wouldn't have been the player I'd been if I hadn't made those mistakes. So yeah. I'm glad I made them and use them as learning opportunities.
Yeah,
I don't. And then, you know, obviously, in terms of some successful days, there was a few good ones. You know, we talked a bit about Bayern Munich. We talked a bit about Man City, the promotion. You know, I've got some great stuff. Obviously, with Southend, good promotion days. I don't. They're just there, and there's too many to want to go back.
Too many to pick
one again. I don't want to pick one out.
Nah, that's fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough. That means you had a good career, mate, if you've got too many to pick from.
Yeah.
Before we do, I've got one as well. It's actually not Southend related, but we did sort of touch on it, but there's got to be some funny Sam Hamam stories, or surely, or something about that contract. There's got to be something dodgy in there.
Was with Sam was when I went and met him the first time, I got Sam drunk and he fell asleep next to the speaker in the bar. Seriously, he fell asleep next to a speaker. The contract with the sheep's testicles was funny, eh? It was just standard, Sam. It was kind of just, just wanted to really, you know, not upset the Welsh guys, but wanted to be like, we're the sheep shaggers. So
yeah,
we might as well play that card. And, you know, people like Rushy got proper filthy over it. And called it that we were insulting the Welsh, but it was actually a bit of a play on, you know, on something that wanted to just get people engaged with Cardiff.
Well, we'll let you crack on. Thank you so much for taking some time.
Good to talk to you.
Cheers, mate.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
For the rest of the season, all right?
Cheers, mate.
It all goes well. Good luck. See ya.
See you later.
See you soon.
Cheers, mate.
See ya.
When he's talking about the crew, that it made me realise, though, just how sort of big it was, you know, for the size of clubs. Yeah, you know, you almost don't think Spencer Pryor, I just think Southend, you know, but when you look at his entire career, it's impressive. Mm. Yeah, it's a seriously impressive career.
Yeah, I guess it's probably because, well, me and you are very similar age. When I saw him play, it was at the end of his career. So yeah, you don't necessarily know what had come before that.
That's what I mean. You always picture him as the sort of, you know, it was still probably nearly 15 years ago, but as the old experienced centre-half when he was about, 33?
Yeah.
You know, but obviously...
Yeah, I've only ever known him as a veteran. Career, you know?
Yeah, but he's had all that career before. I just didn't realise until we started talking about it. It's really impressive, I think.
Yeah.
But a great guy as well.
Yeah, yeah, so, great fella. Great fella. Loved his honesty. And, yeah, no, very... extremely thankful for him coming and having a chat with us, because again, we want to add that we literally chance our hand with these guys. Like, let's have a chat. Spencer was actually someone that we spoke to about probably 6 months ago in the peak of that first lockdown period for us here in the UK, where we wanted to try and get him on then, and you know, couldn't make it happen because me and Farms went back to work and just schedules, like we couldn't make it work at that time. But this time around, he actually got in contact with us and said, look, let's do it. So I think that sums up what an ordinary bloke he is.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. Got a few more lined up, to be fair, haven't we? So
yeah, we got a few that we're working on. Hope you enjoyed that little change in format where we announced it prior to recording, so you, no pun intended, that you could get some. I didn't actually mean that you could get some questions in, but obviously the reason we've not really done that is because you risk if someone lets you down, then we're the ones that get
which
left.
We have had, actually, haven't we? We've had a couple of songs already.
Had a couple, yeah. We won't name names, but they're still... Listen, yeah. People are busy. It's a whirlwind world at the moment. People have got families. Yeah. It's not a criticism. Like, you can't come and have a chat with two random blokes that you don't know.
But, yeah.
Yeah, so you do obviously leave yourself wide open to that risk that someone can let you down after you've advertised it. But
yeah,
we'll keep
yeah.
trying. Thankfully, that one worked. And yeah, thanks to everyone that did send in some questions.
Yeah, and as we say, you know, we had to fit into an hour, unfortunately, because he was going to work, but sort of couldn't fit sort of everything that we did plan on getting in there. But it was still a good chat, and I said I'd like to get him on again if he's ever free, or even if he's over here one time, you know, on holiday or something. I'd love to try and get something done then. So,
no, I wouldn't be coming to the UK for a holiday anytime soon, would you? If...
I mean, I wouldn't do it anyway, but you never know. Might want to see some family or something. But
yeah,
hopefully everyone enjoyed it anyway.
Yeah, and hopefully it won't be too long before we can sort the next one.
When we record the next one, we'll be out of the relegation zone then. So.
Yeah, we won't be out of lockdown. We'll be out of the relegation zone.
Yeah.
I'll take
Even out of the season's just void. But
yeah.
I'll take either.
Once again, thanks to people that did send in the questions. And yeah, we'll see you very soon.
Yeah, thank you, Ben.
See you later.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.